Are marketers about to be replaced by AI? Is Google losing the search game, and will young marketers even have a future in this industry? Or are we witnessing the slow death of everything we once knew? In this SMX Advanced Special Edition, we dive deep into the tectonic shifts shaking the foundations of marketing. AI-powered search, collapsing PPC models, and the rise of autonomous media buying, and what it really takes to survive and thrive as a marketer in 2025 and beyond. Will agencies die or adapt? Is SEO dead or just mutating? And is AI going to make us irrelevant or superhuman? This conversation is raw, unfiltered, and absolutely packed with insights, and you won't hear which you won't hear anywhere else. So my name is Timon Hartung, and I'm leading an SEO and AI consultancy, and we guide companies through this disruption of digital transformation and obviously SEO and everything the future throws at them. And today I get to sit down with one of the sharpest, boldest, and most original voices in the world of modern marketing. He's an entrepreneur, photographer, and founder of AimClear, one of the most decorated agencies in performance marketing, with 27 US Search Awards, including multiple wins for Best Integrated Agency. He's been called Social Media's Maverick, a marketing philosopher, and one of the top 25 influential PPC experts on the planet. Whether it's SEO, PPC, or social, Marty's insights cut through the hype and get to the heart of what's next. From New York to Sydney, he's keynoted global stages, judged the biggest awards, and written critically acclaimed books like Killer Facebook Ads. And he's taking the stage later this year at SMX Advanced in Berlin, where he'll deliver what's sure to be one of the most talked about keynotes of the year. So please welcome the one and only Marty Weintraub.
Willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Marketing Meets Technology. Hier hörst du Insights zu Digital Marketing Strategien und Technologien. Viel Spaß bei dieser Folge.
Marty, it's amazing to catch up with you. And yeah, what have you been up to lately? Because especially with, you know, AI going on and we haven't seen each other for quite some time, real in person. How has AI been changing AimClear, and what have you been doing? And I know you've been working a lot with all the different channels, but what have you been focusing on, and what is your, you know, what is going on right now?
Well, first, thank you for having me here today. I'm very grateful to be on this podcast and keynoting at SMX Europe in Berlin. I've been having an amazing time. It's the funnest time of my whole career. It's the funnest time of my whole life. A few years ago, we started AimClear's marketing AI lab because we understood what was happening and believed that marketers have a decade-long experience with some form of AI embodied in all our tools. I spend my time empowering our executives and helping them be awesome and maybe skip some years of evolution for my experience. I get to work with key clients and train companies all over the world in AI empowerment. Like, it's a pretty big deal what's happening, and learning to navigate that within our own company and helping our clients navigate that, and then taking some assignments doing that, consulting with very large companies, also two speaking engagements in Europe this year and nothing else, which we could talk about later, which is a wonderful feature, not a bug in my world. So this has been just the most exciting time ever. I thought about maybe stepping away all the way from my marketing job and just enjoying fishing along the Canadian border and photographing the aurora. But why would I want to miss the most exciting thing that's happened in the marketing world since, like, the typewriter? Way better.
I agree. The AI stuff has been so crazy. That's why I'm so amazed. You already created the marketing AI lab at AimClear quite a long time ago, right? So you've been in the AI game for much longer than most companies have been. And I think you have the really most experience in that space, especially looking at it from the marketing world, where most people just joined when ChatGPT 3.5 came out, which is probably like two and a half years ago. And you've been dabbling in that space and really creating your own LLMs for much longer, right?
Yeah. And we understood many years ago that this was going to happen, and we tooled the whole creative system at AimClear in a modular way that expected a future ability to be able to parse massively large, barely or unrelated data sets into creative determinations and use that for our advertising, and built out our own tools to do that. So when this happened, we were just sitting there ready. So if you go, what have I been doing? I've been doing the most I've done in my whole career. And it's the single most exciting, invigorating, intellectually stimulating, like my mind. It just goes all the time. I'm so excited by what's happening in our industry that it's hard to sleep at night, which is plays into my keynote in Berlin. Great marketers thrive on disruption. They always have. Like, we're the ultimate.
As you're one of those who really can see the future and really at the pulse of the future, I want to ask you like one of the biggest questions first. And that is AI going to replace marketers, or is it just another tool in our evolving tool stack?
AI will disrupt and eliminate many jobs in every industry in the whole world, unless you're literally taping things on pipes or wiring things for electricity or the trades. But it will create as many jobs in those verticals as it eliminates. It will separate the wheat from the chaff. In other words, it's not a great time to be a poser that just pretends that you know what you're doing. So the question was, is it a job killer? Will it eliminate all our jobs? No, it'll make us even better at our jobs. It will create a class of workers and job titles and tasks that didn't exist before at the same time as it eliminates. So the short answer is both.
Okay, great. And what have you been up to lately as, you know, AI has been coming up? And I think the last time we've seen each other has been a couple of years. So I haven't talked to you since the boom of AI. So what have you been doing? What has AimClear been doing?
Well, marketers have been using AI in some form for the better part of 10 years. So this should not be a surprise to us. And some years ago, I helped found AimClear's Marketing AI Lab, which is a team of people that just devotes to building out processes, workflows, tools, agentic teammates. Mm-hmm. And with the data and processes and tools that we've gathered, not only have we transformed our agency very gently and elegantly over time, but we've been doing high-level strategic consulting all over the world. We've helped executives through AI adoption by helping to create real-world playbooks, mm-hmm. and based on proven outcomes, because too many executives see AI as an AI threat and not as a challenge to the future excellence of their leadership.
That's very interesting. But how many of these agents are already like in use? Is that something that is already very common, or is it just at the beginning right now, like having a teammate as an agent?
That depends on how you define agent. So in one sense, we have the utopian future that nobody has really fully actualized, where every data set is... Think of every data set as a silo. GA4, TikTok organic, TikTok paid, Google's webmaster tools, mm-hmm. Google ads, YouTube, Meta, CRM, the world, how interest rates are, consumer sentiment, tariffs. And think of every one of those as a silo, and think of every one of those silos as having an agent that is a station manager. And the job of that station manager is to interrogate the agents, yeah. and speak to all the other station managers. And then the humans in the mix have the ability to query a station manager that works with the other station manager and then returns scheduled and ad hoc results and does things. So nobody is really actually there all the way. But if you think of doing a deep research project in ChatGPT another AI tool to do highly specialized tasks on a schedule through the API, we have that. So when somebody says, are agents actualized, or are agents real? Do they actually work? Do you actually use them? Show me any of them that actually make you any money anywhere. The answer is absolutely yes, incrementally. But in our beautiful office in Minnesota, or in Duluth or St. Paul or Detroit, as we walk in the stairs, there is no big red button where we go, easy button. I could just leave now. No matter what happens in our marketing universe today, no humans are required to moderate that because it's all agentic AI. We're not at that place yet. And using AI agents is usually in a sequence task-based. Like, the more nested you get in AI agents, the more they have discretion and decide what to do and then go to it. That just zooms the human out farther in the process. So the short answer to that is many human tasks have been augmented by AI. Some human tasks have been replaced by AI, and we still need marketers.
That's very good. But how much work was that to implement this? Because, I mean, this is not something you do like in a month.
That's a very good question. And that is all relative. Of course, in one sense, it was an astronomical effort that took my whole life, my whole career, to prepare me for what to do. And every step and every technology all along the way was part of the work. So far as building tools, and that was a lot of learning, because we build these massive AI tools that to vibe code. SASs that were chunky and replaced them. We use them. The question is how long does it take to really build a massive SAS replacement? And the answer is not very long. How many thousands of hours of experimentation across how many humans did it take to figure that out? It took years to figure it out. And it's a moving target too. Anything we do with AI is somewhat obsolete at the moment that we're doing it. Like in a few weeks or a couple of months, ChatGPT-5 is going to come out, and nobody knows really exactly what it's going to do. It'll probably roll many of the models together, and then we're going to have to scramble and figure out what to do again. But may I tell you a story?
Yes, of course.
Can I tell you a story? So I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston some years ago, and I learned, because I'm a musician originally, and I learned synthesizers. Mm-hmm. The technology was a company called ARP, A-R-P, and they had synthesizers like the Odyssey and the ARP 2600. And I can assure you that they bore little resemblance to what synthesizers look like today. Very different. But the most important part was that Berklee taught me to not just work with those synthesizers, but how to learn about each new generation of synthesizers. And here's what's not going to change. We're going to still need to figure out how to get the marketing things we need done. And it's the methods that change, or how much involvement of humans there needs to be. So it took freaking forever, and it was overnight. It was an overnight thing that took like 25 years.
It's so true. It's so true. I like that you're saying that the human part is still needed, because when we talk to clients or people on, I would say just, you know, who are involved in AI, they're all like, oh, yes, we can do SEO now with AI. Oh, we can do PPC now with AI. Oh, and Meta and Mark Zuckerberg is openly talking about that he wants basically you just to give a URL and a goal, and then they will do the rest. And some people are saying, hey, this is going to happen in the next 18 months. Other people are saying this is never going to happen or will only create mediocre results.
My first reaction was, oh, great, we'll use another channel. however, Meta is a very smart company. Meta is a very smart company. And so if that reality came to be, that would push human marketers further towards the confluence of product conception and development, and less about how to amplify the features or benefits or value proposition to the end user. Mm-hmm. Most really good marketers will tell you that the best SEO is a product that doesn't suck. Laura LePay said that at MozCon in like 2008 or something. Laura LePay, very smart marketer. And so the reason we're not afraid when we hear Mark Zuckerberg say things like that are, we're at our best when we use our marketing knowledge and reading the data that is the reaction of the marketplace to make the widget or the toy or the service offering for something or the application, it could be in the future that marketers take their place as the absolute authority at turning data into product roadmaps.
Wow.
Because the ultimate marketing is using the data we use to sell things, to make things, to sell things.
You're so right.
One thing that you asked a minute ago that I thought I want to just go back to, if you don't
mind,
because it was gestating in my mind while we were talking there. So you asked if AI was going to kill human jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So what we tell people who are afraid, because as you know, in your marketing travels, you see a lot of people who are afraid.
Yes.
We say first, use AI to amplify your human strengths. So one of the coolest exercises you can do is to use AI to map which parts of you cannot be replaced by AI.
Oh, interesting.
Every single person in every single craft has some part of their job that cannot be replaced by AI. I promise you, AI cannot go make coffee in the morning for me. Not yet. It will be able to, but it doesn't know my tastes yet.
Yes,
that's a silly example. But the point is that make a long list of all the things that you do, all the tasks with or without discretion, and then use various AI models to say which parts of me are highly likely to be replaced by AI, and the time frame in a table, please, markdown. And then say which parts of me are going to be very difficult for an agent to replace. The best way to do it is to just face the challenge head on. If you're paralyzed by fear of being replaced, I promise that you will be.
Yes.
If you open your eyes and you embrace the ways AI can amplify your productivity as a human and hold on to the parts of you that AI will never replace or not replace, like AI is never going to breathe this air for me. It's never going to overwhelm me with emotion of empathy for the consumer of a product at my observation of the result. Like, AI is really, really cool. And humans are too.
Yes, I agree.
We're at least as good as AI.
Absolutely. I think that it's also like, I always think about those jobs that are going to be replaced. And I think it's like repetitive stuff. It's going to be replaced really fast. And I think it's good. Like, why should a human do data entry? It makes no sense. Let a machine do it. It's the same as, you know, if you look 100 years ago, why should somebody plow a field by hand? Let a tractor do it. It just makes more sense. And it saves humans time to do something they're really good at. So I always, this is something, it might be a little bit too philosophical, but when people are talking about income for everyone, right, which is obviously a different topic. But then I always say, like, this can happen as soon as robots take over all labor and AI does a lot of things. And then we can spend time doing art, doing music, things, you know, that are really, really impressive.
Well, you touched upon a few really interesting things there. And I'll share with you that I just completed a certification at London School of Economics on AI ethics.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really quite a fascinating process, because what I can tell you is that the workers who have the jobs that are not about repetitive tasks are upset that AI is replacing that part of the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
In recent studies, there's been some data that came to light saying that workers aren't happy about the parts of the workplace that AI is replacing. So because AI is replacing jobs that have some human creative discretion, in a perfect world, it would only replace the repetitive tasks, and it's not a perfect world that way.
True.
But if a parking lot attendant was replaced by a parking ticket machine that scanned the license plate on the way in the garage and scanned the license plate on the way out of the garage, pulled a public database with car ownership provided by the Registry of Motor Vehicles, and then automatically invoices you on the account you set up with the garage, then most certainly the people who sat in the parking lot booth and said, "Hello, Marty, ticket please, $2.80, please." Most certainly they lost their jobs, but think about the ecosystem of thinkers and workers and doers that built and maintained the application that speaks for. Like, whoa. Yeah. Even Sam Altman says it's going to eliminate many jobs and it's going to create many more jobs. Bill Gates takes the same position. Who the fuck knows what Elon Musk says? Sorry.
No worries.
So be not afraid, child. Be not afraid.
No, I think it's really amazing. And if we go back, we can always see like there was this crazy law. I think I can't remember in which state it was, but there used to be when the cars were developed, there used to be one horse running in front of a car. So it could not go faster than a horse, and the horses would not lose their jobs, which is absolutely insane. And looking at AI, I think it is one of the great inventions that could have never happened without the internet, and the internet couldn't have happened without many inventions before. But I think it's a time saver for everyone. And yes, people are going to lose their jobs, but they can, with AI, they can reskill faster than they could have ever, right? If they want to, obviously, right? I do understand that there's economic impact for certain groups, and they will have a very hard time. But the future is just, I think it's brighter, and obviously has dark sides as well. But
I think it's brighter too. Well, so I have a few more years on this body maybe than you do. And so I was an active marketer for years before the internet, for at least 10 years before the internet. And then I was in the television broadcast industry for years as the internet dawned and helped many television stations make their first websites many years ago. And so my whole career has been born of insane evolution, the crushing of one channel and the rise of another. For instance, right now, I wouldn't want to be Condé Nast that makes their wealth in part by direct placements on a CPM basis.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be a publisher. Like this whole thing is crushing. Google's AI overviews are destroying publishers.
Yes.
Just like the internet destroyed television stations, local news, local newspapers. Like we've seen this before. If you take AI and add up what it means, it's like the internet plus the printing press plus global community. I mean, it's a really, really huge deal. But great marketing has always thrived on disruption. Always. And great marketers have always strived to render themselves obsolete. In the 90s, there was one year in my marketing practice where I learned to make compact discs on a CD burner that cost $5,000,
yeah,
before anybody else did. And that year, I made about $30,000 just making CDs for advertising agencies, $70 at a time. Right before the whole world got CD burners, I realized that was going to happen. And so the next year I made $100,000 teaching advertising agencies to buy them. And then that skill was obsolete when it was in every Hewlett Packard computer that came out. And every time I embraced my own obsolescence. People need to embrace whatever obsolescence they incur as a feature, not a bug, Because if your job is marketing with today's technology, you're done. If your job is always knowing what the next technology is and helping companies adapt, then you're never done.
I think that is so amazing. And it actually answers my question. What is the one core skill every marketer must develop to stay relevant in the AI era? And I think that what you just said is exactly that. To know what the next technology is.
Yes. We're not in the business of today's technology. We're in the business of being in tomorrow's technology before tomorrow. Timon, we require our clients to train with us on AI, and we bundle it into all our contracts as a non-visible line item because we don't want them screwing up our marketing with bad AI. Yeah. And we know they're going to want to do it anyway. And it just pushes us up higher on strategy. AI can replace strategy, and it does. And it can replace tactical execution, and it does. But it just keeps setting humans free to operate at a higher and higher and higher and higher and higher level. Like, this is the most exciting time in the history of marketing. We're not afraid at all.
I agree, and I love that you're training them, because that is actually one of the biggest issues we've had with clients asking about our strategy. They're asking ChatGPT or Gemini and then coming back with the answers to us, like especially in SEO, like what should we do with this page? And it's like, yeah, it's an average, okay-ish answer, but it's not specific enough to help. And then they're kind of like combating with us about this with a ChatGPT answer, which is not helpful. So I like that approach, actually. And maybe one additional question about this is, are you going to see a mass extinction event for agencies or freelancers who don't adapt quickly enough?
And yes.
How do you think the agency model is going to evolve over the next 2 to 3 years?
It's funny because there have been a half a dozen touch points over the last 20 years of marketing where I've been asked similar questions. Major events that come to mind were personalized search, the dawn of social media in the mid to late 2000s, the evolution of Google as a half-assed garage-based search engine to the most dominant platform in the world, the demise of Yahoo and Panama. We've been asked these questions, and no doubt people said, well, what do you think is going to happen to scribes now that the printing press has been released? And what do you think is going to happen to people who train horses for a living now that we have the locomotive? And the answer is lots of horse trainers went out of business. They found jobs as the engineers of the locomotives. The trouble is, and where the fear lies, is that it's not a one-to-one deal. And people get hurt, and people win disproportionately big. And that comes down to the ethics of what you mentioned before. Because now there's questions like, for the jobs and job titles that are rendered obsolete by the technology, who owes them what? Do the companies owe them retraining and money, even if they're not immediately useful? Should the government create salaries for people who are rebuilding their lives and skills? In America, that's a particularly vital question, since our government is going the opposite direction and reallocating wealth to the people who need it the least.
Yes.
So that's as opposed to companies like Taiwan, that countries like Taiwan that literally use AI as part of the democratic process, so the elected representatives can poll their constituencies to actually participate in a democratic system. So your question was, do I think agencies are going to go out of business? dude, look at your LinkedIn, open for work, open for work, open for work, open for work. People who I would consider to be very well known in our industry are getting are losing their jobs with companies that are very large publishers. Mm-hmm. I think that the even in any paradigm where if you go, well, 100 agents, if there's 10,000 agencies and 3,000 are going to go away, the top ones will remain.
Oh, yeah.
So I think the one, ultimately, the ones that will not remain are the ones that didn't offer as much value in the first place.
Yeah.
And we do need to remember that we're talking about people's lives here.
Yeah.
I mean, this is actual people with families or partners or pets or friends or some combination of those things. And so... yeah, for sure. I know lots of people who write content that don't have jobs anymore.
Yeah.
They weren't replaced by just AI, though. They were replaced by people that use AI better and do 20 times the work.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I mean, still, human effort is still really important. I see it very similarly, but I have a question about the adoption speed and how quickly the market is going to shift. So everybody I talk to who's in our space uses AI every day, multiple times, basically doesn't use Google search anymore. But are we overestimating how fast AI and AI search will be adopted by users? Or are we actually underestimating it? And this is a question I've been asking myself the past few months. And I haven't found the correct answer yet, because it feels like everybody in our space is using it. But then I talk to people on the street who are not in marketing, and they also use it. Maybe not as good as we do, but they use it because it's so easy.
It's the right question, and let's reframe it. And let's draw the analogy of a medical prognosis. Something happens to you medically, and you go to the doctor, and they say, you have a 40.3% chance of surviving for 5 years. And you go, okay, great. When was that data gathered? What's unique about me? Those are median points based on a data set. The real question I want to know is, what are my chances? Because if I don't survive, that is 100%.
Yes.
If I do survive, that is 100%. And so this is really the game of 100%. Not what percentage, and the 100% is of your audiences.
Interesting.
Your audiences. The real question is, how many people in your audiences, your ideal customer, how many of those people are using AI? How many of those people use Google? And so that Rand Fishkin has had some very interesting writings and videos about that. Yes. And that resonated with me deeply. So then you go, okay, well, every generation of technology that is new has early adopters. Every generation of technology has people that says, I'm not getting one of those damn computers. I'm not getting a smartphone. I like my flip phone just fine. But you know what? People who are like you and me, if your target audience is a marketer, a very high percentage of us use advanced tools. So the right question to ask and the study to make if you're a marketer is, where are my customers? Funny thing, that's the same thing marketers have been asking since about the 1800s.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you've always said that brand authority is like really important, right? And you've always been, you know, really good at mapping the user journey and, you know, being really progressive about thinking outside of the box, not just as a marketing as a tool, but also like really as the making marketing that actually resonates with the audience. And I think that is getting really important now, because it has always been important, but it was always so easy not to do it. And now it's getting really important with AI search. Just being on brand authority now and being mentioned somewhere. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm pretty sure we're going to look back on the internet as 25 years where people's brains turned to shit before it got back to the way it always was. Because before the internet, you heard of something, you researched it however you could with whatever tools were available in the day. There was word of mouth amongst users and recommendations and Joe DiMaggio endorsing a Mr. Coffee machine. Mm-hmm. And people made their decisions in some mashup of brand authority, data, social proof, functionality, legend. And so then the internet came along, and starting in the early 1993, 1994, and from like 1994 until about 3 years ago, you could practically sell shit easy. like you could wrap a piece of shit up in a bow and sell it once. You wouldn't get recurrent sales because it was crap. But marketers like you and me could take anything and sell it. Like you could make it look good easily. I mean, in the beginning of the internet, if you could center Helvetica text on a gray web page, you could sell things and generate phone calls and things like that. But then as the internet evolved and marketing evolved, the engines, platforms, communities, all grew real bullshit detectors.
Yeah.
Like to where the other word for spam is bullshit. Like it just is. Like, and so it's not impossible by any means. In fact, ChatGPT and answer engines are the Wild West where you can kind of get away with spam again.
True.
And it's going to be for a while. We could talk about that afterwards because that's a whole additional conversation. But the one constant that held for the history of marketing, except for that 20, 25 years of the internet, is that brand is number one, number two, and number three. And the only thing that is a possible higher power to brand is product quality, usefulness to humans, differentiators, value proposition, like what the product is, and then belief in a brand. Great marketers could get around that for the longest time. But even so, brand, like we just spent 10 years of our lives studying the effect of brand video impressions on performance marketing metrics, mm-hmm. CAC, ROAS, lifetime value, et cetera. And so the reason that AimClear, it's 31 US search awards and it's 9 best small integrated agencies. And all the work that went into those awards, which really only means we have incredibly cool clients and good marketers, great marketers that work at our company. Almost all the unifying thing in all of those is we've always been super interested in doing power correlations of how brand prominence affects performance marketing metrics. Like, and so AI actually makes those correlations really very, very easy, easy. And so that's fascinating because we've seen some case studies where clients did a lot of SEO, what SEO is today. And another client, another business, I'm not talking about clients, I'm talking about case studies, but
yep.
In one case study, tons of content, tons of amazing links from great publications, mm-hmm. like tons. But another client does something radical or even gimmicky, gets on 15 morning shows, 2 national morning shows, and the rest local morning shows, has influencers chiming about them on Reddit or on TikTok or on LinkedIn. And then you go into an answer engine and run 3,000 inputs to the answer engine. And the brand that didn't do much of the SEO work comes back. Why? Because of brand propagation. Mm-hmm. So there is a confluence of answer engine and AI search, AI SERPs. There's a confluence of how brand authority affects that that lines up with what we've always believed. And in some really funny sense, there's a deep irony in it to us. It's really gone 360 from product, brand, being able to sell anything, anyway, brand.
Yes.
And it's not exactly fair. It makes it harder to make a new brand unless you work with people like you and me.
Yes.
Because we know how to be a brand.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting how it's changed. I mean, SEOs, the really good SEOs have been saying become a brand for a long time. And obviously you didn't have to because you could just, create content, build links. And it still works. And now it gets so important. And we've seen this ourselves in our case studies, being cited. And don't even talk about links, just being cited all over the place, being talked about in videos like the podcast we're doing right now, right? The AI reads that, being mentioned in reviews, being mentioned all around the web, creates your brand. And the AI is incredibly good at seeing all these points, putting them together and seeing you as a relevant brand. And that is something that works obviously in a smaller scale as well. You don't have to be Nike or Mercedes-Benz or a huge brand to have this effect. If you're a small hotel, even that works in your hotel context. Obviously, it doesn't work to rank against a huge brand. But this is something we've seen, which is really interesting, and it has changed the game. And I'd like to hear your perspective on how much do you think like old SEO and AI search or AI SERPs or answer engines, how much do their rankings overlap from the ranking factors? That's always something, people always talk about. So it's a really interesting
question. Well, first, our friend Marcus Tober from Semrush, previously of Search Metrics and an SEO Oktoberfest brother, dear friend. Marcus is a dear friend. Semrush just released data that said that of all the answer engines, the one that diverges the most from Google SERPs is Google's AI.
It's crazy.
It's Google's AI. I think the answer to that is vertical specific.
Yeah.
I think the answer to that is still being written. I think that it's become a if you take all of what everybody thinks, Jono Alderson, mm-hmm. Michael King, Dwayne Forrester, Kevin Indig, our friend Dejan in Brisbane, Australia, Dejan Petrovic, Eric Wu, Dennis won't even try to say his last name, if you take what all the, Will Scott, if you take what all these super duper 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 smart SEOs say about it, it has become more of a technical and machine learning and RAG exercise than it was in the past. So I think that if you just do SEO the way we've always done SEO and go, oh, I don't need to worry about this at all, that's not very smart.
Oh, yeah.
I think the job description of SEO has now melded with what we always thought of as technical SEO.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more about the machine learning piece. Say, if you ever want to do something really interesting, go out and make PDFs of the last 30 blog posts from the people that you think are the most 100 most important people in the world. And then use ChatGPT's API to make a tool that has a million tokens of context, and with the temperature turned all the way down so it cannot be creative, and tell it you may only return data that comes from these blog posts, and then stage debates about these topics with the top thought leaders with ChatGPT. And you'll find that we have done this exercise and we draw upon this tool. We won't ever release the tool because that wouldn't actually be fair to our friends.
Yeah.
But I'm perfectly fine calling up Michael and asking him what he thinks about something. And I'm perfectly fine. Well, I mean, he published the 30 blog posts. I'm fine polling them with AI. And I'm fine having the mythological Michael Avatar debate, the mythological Dwayne Forrester Avatar, and come out with what they think and what they disagree on. And what you will find if you look at the sum of human knowledge using low temperature GPT 4.0 turbo on all these topics, you will get a diversity of opinions, and where they all agree is you're kind of in trouble if you do it the old way only.
Wow, I really
And that there's many aspects of the way we've always done it that will never fail, but they're more esoteric and less technique. Like, I've been chunking and fanning for 8 years or 10 years. That's how SEOs think. That's what they do. That's not actually very new. It's just a thing that may help with retrieval from AI answer engines, maybe. Seems to. Some data says it does. But really, how important is that with figuring out that new mothers need a certain kind of appliance to help them with their new baby and what the features need to be? And then ironically, if you're defining the product, then you could use AI to help do that. One person who is really smart about that is our friend Eli Schwartz. Mm-hmm. Like, he's very smart. He's always had a product-centered focus on SEO, which takes me all the way back around to when we first started chatting. It could be that marketers will finally take their place as they retrain as the most authoritative people in the product cycle.
Yeah.
You take somebody like Eric Wu, who works for Andreessen Horowitz, mm-hmm. on the product side of SEO, who always wins or almost wins the competition at SEO Oktoberfest. And he's an SEO by background, highly technical cat, mm-hmm. very technical. And he helps define product decision making for some of the hottest investments in the world. Like, we as SEOs, we have radical skills that other humans don't have. We've been doing word math for how many years? Yes. How many years have we been doing word math? I'm plugging in my computer here.
A long time.
It turns out that, like, a lot of the work that we're getting at AimClear is for companies that don't do marketing or don't need us initially for marketing. They need us to help transform their organization. And sometimes that comes out of our marketing that we do for them. And sometimes we get the marketing gig afterwards.
Yeah.
Marketers are the perfect SEO and paid marketing and programmatic and OTT. And we have received the best training for AI implementation of any professionals in any vertical anywhere.
Wow. I agree. First of all, I love that proposition where you take the smartest people you know, get their blog posts, and just let them debate. But I also
It's amazing.
It is, like, really amazing. And you can do that in any field,
start taking
the
things you're recommending to clients and say, have all of my smart friends beat this up, please.
Yes. And I think that is also, this is a superpower that only AI can give you. And then the other thing is, I also think that it's just crazy where AI is taking us right now, and the possibilities. And the SEOs were always the people who were in between all these sections. They were always in between technical, marketing, product. They were always at the intersection. And if you look at SEO, what we do today, we need to be plugged in everywhere. And for instance, we're discussing with the C-level domain change for internationalization, and we're integral because I've done this so many times. I know what happens. I have done this so many times, the internationalization. I actually know how to acquire the domain for a cheaper price, and nobody in the organization knows how to do this. But I'm just the SEO guy, right? But we understand this, and then we understand how to do the internationalization. We know the problems with China, that there's a wall and you have to actually have servers on their side. And then you need to implement the technical correctly. Then you get the writers, but we know where to get the writers for. So it's a highly integrative task. And that's why I was never scared of AI, but I always loved this job of being in there and being more than just that outside consultant. I always loved being, vertically integrated with everybody. But yeah, sometimes it also has its limits, obviously, because, you know, you only have 24 hours a day. But, you know, with AI, maybe at some point we'll have an avatar of ourselves helping people, you know, with our skill set 24/7.
I love what you just said about time demands on the person. So AimClear is 24 people.
Wow.
A year ago, AimClear was 24 people.
Wow.
And the average length of engagement amongst active employees is really long.
Nice.
Between 5 and 10 years. And what's really cool is that we haven't lost anybody because of AI, and we haven't added people, and we're 8 times more productive.
Yeah, because it's so
like
crazy.
Like, we made the decision that we would use AI just to become better, to scale, have more scale. Like, and we really have taken AI and used it to elevate us as humans. Like, sitting on one person can do so much more. And we've really looked at AI as something that integrates into our workflow, not an article at a time, using content as the analogy, but the ideation and then a paragraph at a time. And so, like, we really use a, we, one really amazing thing about AI that we, that has really helped us is that, you know what a normalized database is, where you have a master table,
yes,
and there's a customer column where an ID goes, right?
Of course.
And there's a product ID. And so you can, in many to one, like a normalized, yep, database. What AI is really good at is normalizing databases, not by empirical numbers, but by concept and context. And so you can take these radically disparate data sets that have no apparent normalized relationship, non-relational, like anti-relational data sets, and you can form these powerful correlations that no human could have done reasonably.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting to think that in America, probably Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, taxes, FBI, CIA, and then maybe the major social media channels, we don't know. It's really an interesting government question about how, like, AI could just shred. Think of the correlations that AI, yes, can shred for governments and what that will mean for good or bad governments.
Oh, yes.
It's insane.
It is insane. So just to bring that to perspective, is you remember the time when you avoided certain keywords on phone calls because you thought maybe the government was listening and you didn't want to trigger, like, the recording device? This doesn't matter now anymore. They can just, through sentiment, just analyze it all, and AI will give you the whole conversation with everybody, and they will know if you're right-winged, if you're left-winged, if you're Democratic, Republic, if you're going... I think Minority Report, if everything is tracked, if everything is recorded and analyzed by AI, Minority Report, the movie with Tom Cruise, I think it was Tom Cruise, might become reality sooner than we think.
That's super interesting. The amount of political I just was with you, and note that I didn't judge anything except Elon Musk.
Yes.
the amount of politics that I do are none. Like, I don't do it in social media. I don't keep friends who are political.
Yes.
But yeah, it's the same reason we say please in yes, AI. It's so when the robots are in charge, they don't come and kill us.
Exactly.
That's a Will Scott quote, by the way, my friend Will Scott. For those of you who haven't seen Will Scott speak, because he is just starting his career in Europe, but he's very famous in America, and he's at this SMX Europe conference in Berlin, and
nice,
definitely worth checking out, Will. So yeah, I think that being concerned about that is very real, and I don't say... I mean, this is the most public... All I did was acknowledge that the data sets may have been merged. I haven't drawn any judgments about anything about it, and I wouldn't in public, just because I don't think that's a healthy thing to do.
Yeah.
It's not. And I did watch my words in phone calls, and I do watch what I say online, and my company doesn't take political positions. We're a politically agnostic company, just because everybody's entitled to whatever they want to think.
Yes, I agree. And I think if you look at the correlations and things that are going to happen for medical use, I think this is going to be the absolute superpower for our world, because the things that even 1,000 researchers couldn't figure out over a 10-year period, AI will be in the right model and the right training, of course, will be able to be figuring that out in 10 days.
And that's so interesting. So I use AI personally. Some of you may know that I've had some interesting health challenges over the last, since 2005, so the last 20 years. And so I have all my records from Mayo Clinic. I have every diagnosis, every test, all in one big instance, in one big AI trained up on that. And so when I interact with my doctors or have to deal with medications or whatever, I could drop a test in and just have it explain it to me at any level, contextually relevant for me.
Yeah.
And I've seen it. I've seen how Mayo Clinic uses AI. It's mind-boggling. But here's the thing. We're marketers. So say we didn't have our job at our marketing agency. Mm-hmm. Do you think we could be a public AI officer helping Mayo Clinic deal with its audiences to think about AI better and how Mayo does their ethics?
I think yes.
It's why? Because we're marketers, and marketers are just great at freaking so many things. We're just good at so many things, and we're darned good looking.
Absolutely. That's why I fell in love with this job so many years ago. And you know, I started out as a coder, or I wouldn't say coder, but I was like a business scientist. I studied that, and I love coding till now, but I always enjoy the marketing side because you can move so much. You can move so many people from one side to the other side, right? As a direct marketer, or especially online marketer, you could move a product that nobody knew, but that had great quality. And I think that is a core component that had great quality, and drive audiences to that and get it to be a huge success. And that is always what has inspired me. And I always love the underdog story when there's like this small company trying to fight some big company like Nestle or something like that. I'm just having fun with Nestle because they're so huge and they produce everything in food. And you have this small company and you just give them the right marketing power and they grow to be as big as them maybe at some point. And that's what I've always loved. But what at the core, it was always you had to be super innovative. You could never, never let your guard down or just do this one thing forever and ever, like produce the same food over the next 20 years, like maybe Heinz Ketchup has done, and never have to innovate. You had to innovate every year. And SEO has died so many times, in my career, so that I'm always used to it. I'm used to adapting to a new paradigm.
I also think that our smart friends are going to figure out ways to optimize for anything. If you build it, marketers will deconstruct it.
Yeah.
Like there's some very exciting optimization techniques that are and will bubble to the surface. Anything that can be built can be reverse engineered.
Yeah.
I have a riddle for you.
Yes.
A riddle
okay.
for you. Back around to brand. Because it was in my head when you were asking me about brand. So if you had to do something that moved the sales needle the most in a short period of time, mm-hmm. and you could spend money in search advertising, do SEO, create content, get influencers to talk about it, or have 5 major global newspapers feature an important story about the value of your product, which PR, which one would you make the investment in making real first?
Wow. I mean, it depends a little bit on the product, right? So if you have a B2B product, it would be different, but I'm guessing it's a B2C product, right?
Any product.
Okay. Well, right now, I do think the investment into the big PR newspapers does have a very huge impact.
PR is the answer. And if you had asked me that question 10 years ago or 5 years ago or 15 years ago or 20 years ago, that's what I would have said too.
Oh, interesting.
So we have a very mature PR group at our company, and we're integrated, which means we spend a lot of money in advertising channels, and we do a lot of SEO that pipelines so much money and earns so much money for clients. And we do it by a lot of the same integrated methods that many companies do. But we're just very sharp about how one thing pushes on another.
Yeah.
And so we know that if we invest in branding in one market and on its face, it does not look like it performed, and we look at what that does for performance marketing with a latency and a latency decay, and we compare that to another market where all we did was the performance marketing and no branding, we know that the branding pays for itself in measurable multiples just by itself. And so, like, that branding is tomorrow's, is spending money on tomorrow's conversions.
Yeah.
And PR is the organization of brand voice and brand value and brand sentiment. And so one thing that has never changed in marketing since marketing has been recorded, like, go back, use AI and make a big list of all the most famous marketing people in history, and then ask AI to form a matrix of all their theories, and then drop them into a GPT, and then have them debate the importance of brand generationally, and then how your strategy stacks up towards building brand sentiment, and then use your data and show how that affects how mm-hmm. brand propagation affects performance marketing. And you'll go, oh, the internet is a channel, dude.
Yeah.
It's not a product. Like, it's funny, I'm experienced enough, like, in years now, to understand that the best marketing is an amazing product. It is. Like, the best marketing is amazing product and an amazing brand. The rest is publishing. The rest is distribution. The rest is measurement. Like, let's just keep this in perspective. Oh, one other thing we should discuss here. I wanted to tell you this.
Yeah.
So all the conversations that everybody is having about everything, about AI overviews and zero-click search and retrieval and ranking and AI-specific indexing or passive versus agentic content and dead KPIs and disintermediation of brands and answer content saturation and offer walls and monetization and dark social and AI fusion. You know what all that shit has in common? That's all organic.
Mm-hmm.
And I really haven't heard one person say, oh my gosh, I'm so afraid. I'm not ever going to buy ads ever again. It's true. We don't know what that model is going to be. We know that in Google AI overviews, they stick stuff at the beginning, at the end. It, like, we know, and we know that ChatGPT is going to monetize, and we know that will likely be some sort of affiliate model, and also probably ads too, but we don't know. And we don't know what Meta's going to do in exactly, but here's the thing. Even if Meta's doing the shit, you still have to press the on button. You still have, like, they're never going to take it all away from us. But the point is that if you had asked me for all my whole career, Marty, what's the best and easiest SEO that you need to try first? I would say search pay-per-click ads. Because if the ROI is insane, why bother?
Yeah,
who cares?
Right.
And then once we're making boatloads of money, then we can defray the cost of the ads with organic revenue, and we can cash in on brand with direct traffic and brand search. But for the history of the internet, if you ever went, oh, this room of 300 people at a conference or 1,000 people at a keynote, raise your hand if you get so much free from anywhere you could see, anywhere you do organic, that you never need to buy an ad. And like three nonprofits raise their hand. Or some publishers raise their hands, but not very many, because every channel, platform, engine, community, tool, anything where marketers were ever able to place anything above the fold organically that made them money, That's exactly what became the ad unit afterwards.
Yeah.
Google image tiles looked strikingly like product feeds as that whole thing evolved. And so these engines and these communities and these platforms and all the places where you could do organic things and buy ads, they test us with organic stuff and then they make their ads to do that. Unlike marketers who run ads to prove organic, to a large extent, platforms over the years have taken their most successfully propagating organic units and made that their ads platform. And so let's just remember this. Let's just remember that the greatest superpower for an SEO company is to learn to buy ads. Not because SEO or AEO or EIEIO or and on his farm he had a ad. Is what he had, or she had, or they had. Like, it's just very important to remember that here's what kinds of agencies will go away. Pure organic agencies are gonna have a hard time. They've always had a hard time, and the elite ones will survive, and the very clever ones will survive. We're pretty elite and we're pretty clever. I mean, yes. Some would say, who am I to say? But we have a reputation and our clients make lots of money, which is really the main thing I think about to try to sleep at night is, are they making money? That's the main question. And I would never feel safe if all we did was organic. Not because we're not great at organic. We are, but it's too fickle. And the organic cheese is the one that everybody wants to steal. And it, like, we describe organic only marketing as angels dancing on the head of a pin, trying to get not pushed off, like on Squid Games, mm-hmm. on the show on Netflix, Squid Games.
Yeah, of course.
So organic is angels dancing on the head of a pin, trying to do good. Really, people go, oh, well, I don't believe in ads. Great, more ads for me. Like, from the very minute that I've been a marketer, I went, ads are organic amplification, paid organic amplification. It's a way for me to buy my way in. It's a way for me to move fast enough to prove my messages. It's a way for me to test the ROI. Like, in the early days, people go, oh, I want to do SEO. I go, why? You've got 180x ROAS and a lifetime value that triples that.
Yeah.
Like, why? Make your website pretty. Who cares? Like, and then they go, well, can't I degrade the cost? Yeah, it's 181x, but you spent $1 million on SEO instead of 183x. So really, really, don't be suckered into getting blown away by all this talk. Whenever you hear anything about the demise of the marketing industry or agencies, ask this one very big question. How much of that is paid advertising that they're talking about?
That's interesting.
How many people have come to you in your practice and said, oh my God, I'm so afraid I'll never be able to run an ad ever again. Because that's why we don't have organic. Like, ads are why we don't get to have nice things. So integrated, where you really study the effect of one on another. And also, think about it. Really well-constructed display advertising is branding.
Yeah, absolutely.
Always brand while you're selling. Always sell while you're branding. And, like, it is possible, and we have seen case studies amongst our own clients, where in America, companies have achieved 90% plus name recognition running ads and word of mouth.
Yeah.
And then there gets... If you advertise enough, say you have a mythological unlimited budget, you could just spend anything you want, no limits, billions, anything you want. You could buy more than is available to buy. I promise you that if your product is good, after a while, you won't have to buy ads anymore.
Yeah, true.
So just remember that in the whole re-confluence of brand and technical SEO and word math and product, ads are an absolutely crucial element. If you're an SEO firm only, go partner with a really good advertising, digital advertising agency. You're going to see, so we're one of the last major integrated agencies that has not been rolled up in an M&A liquidity event.
Yep.
There's reasons for that, and we like them. They're good reasons. You're going to see a lot of the last remaining red meat is going to be rolled up.
Yeah.
Because organic companies are going to get rolled up because they're afraid and they're going to make less money than they would have 3 or 4 years ago. And big paid companies are going to want the organic chops. So anyway, during my keynote at SMX Europe in Berlin, I'm just really going to remind people of this. The good news is that there's nobody's going to ride over the hill and save us from the bandits. And ultimately, there are no bandits. There's only small thinkers. And marketers are big thinkers. That's what we do. That was kind of a rant. Sorry about that.
It was amazing because I think it's so true. And there's so much to think about too when you're running an agency or running a consultancy, to think about how to really get that value chain working much better instead of just selling your practice. And it is, yeah. Wow, mind-blowing, to be honest. And it is,
I think,
exactly
I just yelled at you for 20 minutes. I think I might have just yelled at you. Maybe we should do this podcast again instead.
No, I love this. It's really good because for me, one of the questions I was going to ask was like, will the Google PPC model break down? But it won't break down because that's how they made 80% of their money. That's how Meta makes 80% of their
right.
money.
Right.
That's will never
their
break
only
down.
Product. Man. Well, so that's interesting too. That's interesting too, because now there is a big bake-off competition between like Microsoft and Google for how they can weave AI into their Office products.
Yes.
Because I think that Google makes a fair amount of money from those products,
yes,
too.
Yes, I agree.
But there was a statistic that just came out in the last few days about how Google's ad revenue is way up. And I've also seen other data that questions that whether that's based on impressions or price.
Yep.
But I've also seen that Amazon is exiting the Google auction to a large extent, and that they've been buying, like it's a downward cliff for how much ads Amazon is buying inside of Google, which will, I don't know, is that a play to lower the auction price and hurt Google's top and bottom line? Like, what is that exactly? There's going to be a lot of shifting around, but really in the larger question, well, about Google and surviving, who cares? You'll be able to buy ads somewhere. It's all yeah. I really actually care about. And like always, Google is the show Star Trek, and the old Star Trek, there was this one episode where the men were a totally subservient, primitive class, and the women were incredibly
yes,
advanced.
I remember.
And,
that.
And givers of pain and delight.
Yes, I remember.
Givers of pain and delight. And so Google, I would always say, yeah, I hate them, and I wouldn't have a job without them.
Yeah.
Like givers of pain and delight. But really, we have to think about this in anthropological sense, like how people will deconstruct the much larger trends in 100 years
yep.
from now. So ask yourself, ask AI that. Put in the last 30 blog posts of all your super smart friends. Oh, and you could also go to YouTube and get the video transcripts of conference appearances or their YouTube channels, or subscribe to their newsletter and do that. Like, it's really, really easy to make a knowledge base of everybody that's super duper smart, which I predict you will do in the near future.
Yeah.
And then study the great anthropologists who have done diggings in Egypt or uncovered in Mexico or the genesis of humankind, the great anthropologists, and then deconstruct the theories of great anthropologists, and then start asking questions about our industry. We all thinking about it in micro trends. This year, these 3 years. Ultimately, it doesn't really matter, these 3 years. This is not something I would have known when I was 20 years old, but I know it now. And so I have done this exercise. And if you start looking at our industry from an anthropological sense, let's not be afraid. Let's be freaking awesome.
I love that as closing words, to be honest. I think that is the best advice. Let's not be afraid. Let's, you know, have that one awesome. Skill. Let's be awesome, and let's have that one skill to always be, you know, predicting or being in the next tech, the next marketing trend. So we're always
Don't focus on being an SEO. Focus on what makes you an SEO.
Yeah.
Focus on the core human, intellectual, creative, word, math, technical skills, and 10 years of experience using tools like Google Ads that have had AI in it since the beginning.
Yeah, true.
Like, we've all been trying to make our own AI for a decade, like by the tools that we make. Like look at, I mean, every tool that we've ever used and every ads platform is primitive AI.
Yeah.
We're experts.
And we've been, I mean, yeah, it's large language models have been around for a long time. They were just not that large and didn't give that great answers until ChatGPT 3.5 came out. That's the truth. There was a ChatGPT 2.5 and it wasn't that good.
Yeah. We tried to make our own stuff before that too. Yeah. Like Mad Libs. Like, remember Mad Libs where you could fill in the words? We
were making
tools like Mad Lib tools on spreadsheets for years.
Oh, it makes sense. The way to create content was obviously to create different versions of a good version of content. And this was always, this is now very easy with ChatGPT 3.5 and onward. But before, it was a hard task. And maybe you remember the time at SEO Oktoberfest, there was one of the guys who built this 10 years ago, and he had a really hard time doing it. And he was like already using these very advanced LLM models, but it was very, very hard, very intensive. And at the end, it was just a very good word spinner, right? Spinning words to create different types of text. And
do you remember the web lingo bullshit generator from years ago?
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. That's exactly.
Word salad.
Yeah.
Word salad.
And, you know, it used to work at some point, you know.
Well, I don't know that interview was exactly what either of us expected, but it's really nice to hang out with you again.
Likewise. Absolutely. And, you know, one thing that is really amazing is that you with your team of 24 people, who must be really amazing, you have achieved so many awards. That is, you have more awards than people at your company, and that is a rare thing. And I think that is something to really check out. So what is the best place where people who are listening to the podcast can get in touch with Aim Clear, can get in touch with you? And yeah, you're on the conference circuit, of course. Maybe you can say some of the next stops.
Well, that's interesting because I don't speak very much at all. I announced at PubCon last year.
Oh.
I announced it at SEO Oktoberfest. I only do one or two conference things a year, and they have to be very special because I don't hardly speak. I've retired from speaking at SEO Oktoberfest, and I just attend.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing any American conferences this year at all. I wanted to, when Sandra reached out, I wanted to speak at SMX Berlin because it's been so important to me in my career over the years. And also, there is no geekier more technical or critical marketing audience anywhere in the world than Berlin. And I think we all know that many or most of the best SEO technicians in the world are German.
Well, thank you for saying that, but I do have to say a lot of the, you know, really innovative stuff also comes from the US. And also,
yes,
I have to say,
shout out
to our Australian friends, Dijon especially, as he's done a lot of really good things for SEO. But yeah, I do think the SMX Advanced in Berlin is one of the very exceptional conferences because it is very advanced. It really tries not to start at the basic or intermediate level. It just tries to start at the expert level, and you can feel that coming into the room because the speakers just kick off where others, you know, end their presentation.
I was first on a keynote panel at an SMX at SMX Advanced in America in Seattle in 2009 after I won the Give It Up contest in search engine land that Danny Sullivan ran. And when I was making my deck for it, Danny called and said, "It's called Advanced. It's SMX Advanced." Because I sent him a question about how intense I could be. He said, "Your goal with this is to push people."
Yeah.
So there's some legendary stories about that I'll tell another time, but it was pretty amazing, pretty amazing.
But
so will you be there in Berlin?
Yes, I might be actually. I'm not a moderator this year, but I might be as an attendee to see you.
Good.
And I might actually see you at the pre-events to SEO Oktoberfest. So yes, I hope to see you in Munich for sure.
Let's have an Oktoberfest beer.
Yes, exactly. And but where can the listeners actually reach out to if they want to work with you?
So first, marty@aimclear.com.
Yes.
marty@aimclear.com, and just put something in the subject that says that
podcast.
Whatever.
Like SMX.
Just anything like that. Also LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I actively maintain my LinkedIn profile, and it's probably my main social channel.
Cool.
Right now, I publish my one thing that you may or may not know is that I travel the world photographing the aurora.
Mm-hmm.
Like I spend weeks in Norway every year and go to Patagonia and the Arizona desert and all that. And so I have a photography website called crackedpepper.com.
Mm-hmm.
Cracked Pepper, and my Facebook. But professionally, please connect with me on LinkedIn, email me straight away. And then I still write fairly often in our blog, aimclear.com, AIMCLEAR.com. So our blog, LinkedIn, Facebook, and my photography. And mostly, if you're going to be at SMX, then by all means, stop by and say hi. Oh, one other thing. I'm gonna do one other appearance this year in Lithuania in mm-hmm. November at the Big Data Conference, running a full day workshop of executive empowerment for transformational AI for a book that I have coming out that I wrote with two other authors that's called AI Without the BS. And mm-hmm. it's a guide for leaders to take their organization through it. So I'll show up with some books in Berlin. So that Lithuania workshop is actually going to be really cool because it's just one-on-one and it's essentially the table of contents for the book. So do look for my next book, and I'm sure Sandra will be happy to share it. Like, it's just about helping leaders get over the hump, and also will help you navigate the EU AI Act, which is hitting full force right now.
Yeah.
So we're doing a lot of consulting now, just helping leaders navigate these muddy waters.
Absolutely. I'll put all the links into the show notes so people can just click on them and write you and connect you on LinkedIn and, you know, go to the photo website and actually, you know, get the book title and everything. So, people have an easier way to navigate that. If you want to, we can do some rapid fire questions if you still have time, just for shorts, but we don't need to. Okay,
knock
perfect.
So go ahead.
It's just quick snippets we can just push on social media. So it's just going to be like short questions, and you can answer in short, or you can answer like within like 20 seconds or something like that. Okay, AI in one word.
Empowering.
Wow. Will AI replace marketeers? Yes or no?
No.
What is one marketing job that definitely won't exist in 3 years?
What is one marketing job that will not exist in 3 years? Answering questions about whether AI will take marketing jobs or not.
I love that. What is one AI tool you can't live without right now?
We built a localization tool that not only translates but localizes along nodes of 500 cultural variables that will do any dialect in any country with a 98% accuracy. And so deconstructing localization, it's the definitive, Michael Bonifils uses it, and it's the most, it's the definitive localization tool on Earth.
Wow, that is powerful.
I'd like to show you, it's really cool.
Yeah, we should do that.
It's shortlisted in the US Search Awards under innovation.
Well, it makes absolute sense. I think that is one of the things that is speaks so much to the audience, because it makes it just so individually unique corresponding. Like if you're in a special dialect in a certain country and the text resonates with you in that, you will get the sale. What are the three things you couldn't survive without using AI?
Processing today's news into digestible segments. Make this shorter or slightly longer. And how do I take the bullshit out of this AI?
Yes. Does ChatGPT write better at copy than humans?
No.
Why?
Because if I ever see any more M dashes or emojis or spacer lines, or it's not just this, it's that, or it's more than this, it's that, then I'm going to vomit on my computer. Read our article, Don't Be an AI Dipshit, on our blog. No, it doesn't write better than humans.
I think it writes really good mediocre ads. They're better than the really bad ones, but they're so bad than really good ones. And if you've read the book by any good direct copywriter, and one is from Mr. Schwartz, I think, then you know how to write really good direct copy breakthrough advertising.
It's really great at taking a whole bunch of performance marketing and then distilling it to the best short ads.
Yes.
It's really great. It's better at turning data into ads than humans are at turning data into ads.
Yeah. I agree. What is one? What's one thing most marketers get totally wrong?
They operate based on fear, not on exuberance, joy, and excitement for what will come next.
Brand or performance? Pick one forever.
Brand.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say that, but it is. It is.
Because brand, I would pick brand because brand facilitates performance. Great performance facilitates brands, but branding, but only in the hands of highly skilled marketers.
Yes. SEO, dead, dying, or just changing?
Changing. It's the greatest and most exciting time in SEO that ever existed.
I absolutely agree. I think it made me really fall in love with the SEO topic again, because I think that SEO was interesting, but with AI, it became life-changing. It just, you know, me being able to work with AI every day gives me so much joy, and then being able to use it on the skill I've built over the many years gives me a lot of joy, because I was always looking for something exciting, and now it is.
Yeah, it was getting a little too easy.
Yes, exactly. Google or OpenAI? Who wins search?
Yes.
Okay. Both. Okay. Is Meta...
It depends on who your audience is. It depends who your audience is. Ask the question, what does my audience do?
Okay. What does your audience do? Oh, no, that was just the question for the short. Yes, I understand now. Okay, I'll have to ask you that again, and you say it again, and then I think that's a good short then. Google or OpenAI, who wins search?
Yes, it depends on who your audience is. To my 88-year-old dad, he doesn't even know what ChatGPT is, but if my 88-year-old dad was a computer scientist, he might. It depends on your audience. If you're a marketer, still both. Like, I like Google still, and it's getting better. I just ask Google more complex things and it'll give you better answers.
Is Meta, and I'm talking about the Facebook company here, still a very good place for marketers? And is it still relevant to run ads and be
yeah,
there?
We sell lots and lots and lots and lots on Facebook. And we've left it when it wasn't productive, and we've come back to it when it is. We're channel agnostic, and Meta products are still crucial in our marketing mix.
What's the best ad you've seen this year?
It's so funny because I can't stand it. But the Super Bowl ad that was political action committees advertising the Christian faith were so devastatingly effective.
Mm-hmm.
So I had mixed feelings about what it was, but they're the most memorable ads I've seen the whole year.
Okay. TikTok or Instagram, where would you spend your last $1,000?
I would look at the previous $20,000, decide which one was most ROI positive, and put my money where data says it was. If I didn't have any data to operate on, I would do all the normal things marketers do and look at what audiences I could target with what kind of ad unit, with what kind of measurement, and then make a pure database decision about who I'm saying what to sell which product.
What's one thing you wish every junior marketer knew?
That they're lucky to have a job, because there are very few new marketers being hired right now, because AI is sort of eliminating the entry-level marketing position. Like, it's not the best time to graduate from university right now. And I wish they knew that they could get ahead faster in their career if they go to the office instead of work from home. We have the hybrid because we need to and because people want it and we're effective. But there's nothing more effective than a group of people being in a room together to get peripheral learnings. I wish they knew that they could cut years off their evolution just by being around the more mature generation of marketers in an office, hearing what's going on, participating, being called into things more ad hoc in ways that aren't really well facilitated by work from home. And that is absolutely what I would want new marketers to know the most.
I think this is the one most valuable tip I've heard in a long time for junior marketers. And if anybody sees this short, I think this is the one most valuable thing you should take home as a junior marketer and also as a junior employee, to be in the office as much as you can. Because as you said, this is the biggest shortcut you can ever take to understand how
and it's also senior marketers too. Like, if you and I could be in a room together versus being work from home, like, there would be a chemistry. You felt that right now, that feeling. Like it's very difficult to create that chemistry ad hoc, like 10 times a day or 5 times a week. I have goosebumps thinking about it. Like, there's a, and that, you know what, that's one thing that AI cannot do. It cannot replace our human chemistry, you and me, writing a song together, brainstorming a marketing strategy, figuring out how to take care of an employee who might have a different need than is normal or typical. Like, AI is not going to replace the chemistry of me holding my lover in my arms, or the inspiration of seeing you sweat while you carry shit. It's just not.
Yeah. One interesting point to that is the founder of Reddit, who is, I presume, a very rich man. He said something that has stuck with me for some time. He said he's investing into something that AI will never, at least in the near future, will not do. And that is, he invests in sport teams, in human sport teams, because the pain and the endurance these sport teams and these players have to endure is actually the thing we're watching. Of course, we're watching the victories and the losses, but we're also looking at the real human pain that this football player, this tennis player is going through by having extreme training for the last 20 years, extreme pain while, you know, doing 90 minutes of sports. And also the human pain of losing or winning. And I think that is something that I found really interesting, because yes, we would not watch 25 robots playing against each other, some sport. Maybe we will, but I don't think it's going to be give the same pleasure as we do seeing humans really, you know, in real effort where we just cannot get to with the butt of a click of a button.
That's interesting. I agree.
What's the most overrated buzzword in marketing right now?
Leverage. Delve. Delve.
What will
The fake inspiration that comes out of ChatGPT makes me want to vomit. Okay, yeah. Keep going.
Oh yeah, I love that. I see so much people just writing with ChatGPT, and it's very boring, to be honest. But yeah, sometimes it has really good summaries. What will marketing look like in 2030?
It will be highly automated. There'll be an agentic workforces and humans that are like super operators that run fleets of AI agents that have humans for supervision. You will have agents supervising agents, but ultimately you'll have humans supervising something, or AI will have taken over and human race will be subservient.
Yes, absolutely. One of those. I agree. Will we still need websites in 5 years?
I think it's a shorter timeline than 5 years. I think it's more like 3 years, and I think we'll need them, but for different reasons. There'll be fulfillment mechanisms, not for luring organic visitors. We're already getting there. And I do think that websites are, like, what we're telling our clients to do is to make websites that look like the web branded. If you take the ChatGPT app in your phone and then brand it really well and have journeys that you can save in an accordion on the left-hand column, I think that the word insurance agent and travel agent for Travelocity or Prudential Insurance are going to take on a whole new meaning, because I think websites are going to become empowered agents in themselves to navigate the data stack. There's still reasons for people to go to websites. And I think at that point, then the highly valuable publishers and highly valuable brands may begin to limit access to third-party AI engines, because organic traffic won't matter. Yeah. And the best agent will be the first-party data. I think websites in 5 years are going to be agents with first-party data that's exclusive to the website. So there's a reason to go there. Like, I think people will try to, like, we're making websites that look like a branded ChatGPT mobile app with opt-in user definable journeys. Like, the best websites should become the agent in the next generation. That's the only way. Like, is to beat them, is to be a better agent, because you have the first party data.
Wow. Yeah. That's crazy. But yeah, I think so.
I bet you do it. I bet you do it.
Now I will. AI generated influencers, genius or creepy? It's
freaking brilliant. Like, I mean, that whole thing started out as a super crude deal. I mean, in the more intimate sides of human beings, people have been satisfying themselves by iconery, and it just leads to the question: if the robotic fireman rolls in and saves the real cat in the burning tree, and crawls up and saves it, and brings it to the owner and said, "Here's your cat," is the cat any less dead because it was a robotic fireman that saved the cat versus a human?
Nope.
I mean, seriously, I'd like to have a different answer than that. But the reality is what gets the job done gets the job done. The more ethical question becomes about, what about the talent that the average that was used to create the artificial influencer was? Like, if it's combined from an amalgamate of 1,000 people that look like this and talk like this and have these mannerisms and speak like this, like it's really a different ethical question than whether it will work. Of course it will work. It will 100% work. People will be able to make fun of it. Like, does the cartoon show The Simpsons work compared to a human show? Like, hell yeah, it does. Hell yeah, it does. Like, this is an obvious answer. It's an obvious answer.
What about authenticity in this case? Does it matter, or does it not matter, or is it specific for the case?
Who said that artificial intelligence can't be authentic? How about if the artificial intelligence drills into user-generated media in 30 countries and 15 different languages, distills the snippets of what matters to people and what has mattered in their lives contingent on this product, and then distills that into a persona that communicates the true value of the product with the heat and heart and empathy of the actual user pool that says why this is awesome stuff. Why is that inauthentic? Why does synthetic personas are automatically assumed to be authentic when in reality an influencer says whatever the F the influencer says? But if I have a synthetic influencer, I can say the amalgamate of knowledge base on the emotions of the product. So I wouldn't be so fast to assume that it's not way more authentic. So authentic, like in 5 years, authentic is going to mean something completely different. Like, yeah.
Wow. Mind blown. Very valid point. And I will absolutely accept that point. And this makes me think about this in a totally different way. Thank you.
That brings me joy.
Last question. And this one, well, it's one for the TikTok world. What skill will make someone rich in the AI age?
What skill will make someone rich in the AI age? Embracing the opportunity to render their current skill set obsolete minute by minute and embrace that which makes them fearful.
Wow. Very philosophical, but very true. So that means you're always basically you're doing a skill set, making yourself obsolete by generating massive value, then finding the next thing that generates massive value and making yourself obsolete in that again.
Yeah, yes. like I've been a marketer since like the early 80s. Like, I've had to become obsolete 100 times. I embrace it. I seek reasons to create your own obsolescence and get paid for it.
Mm-hmm. Keeps you on your toes all the time. It never makes you go, what's the right word I'm looking for? Never makes you go lazy. You always have to innovate.
Please, how old are you?
Me?
Yeah.
43. No, 42.
You're going to have such a fun 20 years, man. I mean, you'll live longer than 20 years, but marketing is going to be so fun. Yeah. I hope you become wealthy and retire in 10.
Yeah, I hope so. Some say we have to, because otherwise there's nothing going to be left. You know, everything's going to be changing. If you look at the economy right now, and this obviously is not part of the podcast, but if you're looking at the economy right now and it's changing so crazy, how the economy in the US is changing, how the economies in Europe are changing. AI is coming into play, then all this crypto stuff is coming. It's like, this is, I don't feel fear. That's not the right word. I just feel like I don't know where to start. It's like, we're doing the AI stuff. We're doing SEO. We're developing our own tools with vibe coding, right? At some point, it does creep up into my mind. I'm like, am I going to drive myself to my office in 2 years? Or is that going to be the Tesla robot doing that and then cleaning my house? And I mean, it's amazing on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's going to be very hard to create a ton of value. Maybe it's not that hard. Maybe just seeing it is hard right now. We just have to innovate, but it's just, I think it's crazy times.
Run to the light.
Yeah, exactly.
Run to the light. Run to the light. All right. Well, that was charming.
Yes.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you. I do these less and less, and I only really do it for love. I do this part of my career now for what makes me joyful.
Yes, and for me it was great because I was looking forward to this so much because I've heard you talk so many times. I've met you a couple of times, and I was like, I see you're doing a keynote at SMX Advanced. I hope you want to do a podcast because I really enjoy getting the deep insight of somebody who's been in the space for so long and really has the big perspective and not, you know, just this very singular perspective of how AI is changing us. And so I was really happy to have you here on the show, and thank you for your time, really. That's the thing I can say.
The pleasure is entirely mine. I'll see you in Berlin, and thank you for this today.
Thank you so much.
Das war's für diese Folge von Marketing Meets Technology. Bis zum nächsten Mal.